From WUOT News, this is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. The Department of Energy's reservation in Oak Ridge is home to a variety of wild animals, including turkeys, but it wasn't always that way. In 1979, wild turkeys had all but disappeared from East Tennessee. That year, Billy Minzer was among a small group of wildlife conservationists who released 18 turkeys into the woods at the University of Tennessee Arboretum in Oak Ridge. Minzer recently revisited that moment with WUOT's Matt Schaefer-Powell.
I want to go back to the moment when you released the 18 turkeys at the Arboretum. You were there.
Yeah, I helped release them.
What did they do? What did you see?
Well, they had to endure 2 or 3 days in a box, and we put radio collars on them and opened the box and let them go, and they flew off. And that was just a great feeling of elation that this might be the start of bringing back a species that's been gone for nearly 100 years.
Then you decided to release some out of the Oak Ridge Reservation. Why the Oak Ridge Reservation?
Well, you had, I think there was about 40,000 acres in the reservation, in fence, high security area, and let that population build up so we could use that as a trapping source to transplant turkeys all around East Tennessee. But I know the scientists at the reservation for Y-12, K-25 were concerned about contamination that any species might pick up, whether it be the Canada geese or the deer or the turkeys, and so they were monitored closely.
Yeah, I know for instance, any deer that are harvested from the reservation, they check to see if there's any radioactivity or contamination. Do they do the same thing with turkeys?
Same things, same checks are done on the wild turkeys. I don't think they've ever found any contaminated turkeys.
Were you concerned when you decided to release the turkeys at the reservation that that might be an issue, that some of them could be contaminated, or were you comfortable that that probably wouldn't happen?
I was confident in the science at the reservation that if there was a problem with it, we'd find it, or they would find it and take appropriate measures.
Why were you intrigued with turkeys? What drew you to turkeys thinking, this is a good animal to restore?
They are pretty spectacular. You look at them during the breeding season, and with the sheen of the feathers of the wild turkeys, they have probably about 10 or 12 different colors on them. They're a pretty magnificent bird. By the way, I saw 25 wild turkeys on the way over here.
Let me ask you something. When you see turkeys like that, wild turkeys, do you have a sense of... I don't want to say ownership, but do you have a sense that, hey, that turkey's here partially because of something I did?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great sense of satisfaction and pride in the wildlife profession and in a better educated and accepting society that has decided that they should have a place to live. That's why we have all these things now that we didn't have. Look, we've brought back the otter, the bald eagle, the osprey. Wolves in some places, the coyotes have come here on their own, beavers, wild turkeys, waterfowl. It's been very satisfying to see those animals come back.
Billy Minzer, thank you very much.
Great, thanks for having me.
Something to think about if you plan to do some online shopping this weekend. The latest cybersecurity systems use what's called machine learning. ORNL researcher Raymond Borges designs some of those systems. He explained his work to WUOT's Chrissy Kuiper.
In industrial networks, SCADA systems are used throughout the system. So basically, the smart grid, gas pipeline, we try to ensure resilience. That'll be the focus of cybersecurity in industrial networks, rather than at your home, which is more focused on privacy. SCADA would be more focused on resilience, but also on privacy, because we don't want the attackers out there getting information about our systems and the configuration of the systems.
What do you mean by resilience?
Just the ability of a system to take a hit and keep on going and keep running, keep providing these essential services like power delivery to homes, not have a massive blackout occurring. And what I do in those industrial networks is called intrusion detection systems. intrusion detection systems, they can either run on the computers themselves, on the devices themselves, and on the networks. So on the devices themselves, we'll be monitoring attacks that occur to the services that are hosted on each device. And on the network side, we'll be monitoring attacks that go toward through the gateway from the internet, because now these systems are being connected to the internet, and that's where these attacks are coming from. These new attacks are coming from. But also you have the always the possibility of an insider threat. For what we do here, we're kind of on the leading edge of making these intrusion detection systems with the newest technology that we have in computer science, which is machine learning.
You're training the machines themselves to be able to differentiate between something that's an attack, it's, you know, somebody on the internet who's trying to get in, or an earthquake.
We actually train a model, and then we run that model as software on the machine.
It sounds like a daunting proposition to plug every single characteristic of every conceivable model into this plan. Right.
Mm-hmm. And then once we give it these examples, this machine learning algorithms, they also have the ability to detect unknown attacks based on how similar to an attack, or if it was more similar to something that was benign.
Are you trying to build something now that is capable of plugging in its own variables? Or do you have to have someone who's manually overseeing all of this all the time?
Yeah, so the challenge is still there of giving it examples. There are other learners that are unsupervised learners. So these models in machine learning cluster the data set based on the attributes. So it really doesn't know which ones are bad. It does help the programmer, the researcher, clustering the examples so that they don't have to go out and label each individual type of attack themselves. But really, those unsupervised learning systems aren't on par with the supervised learning systems yet, at least not for the cyber data. So we're still really depending on the supervised learners, which depend on the user to give it examples, label the examples, and really depends on the expertise of the user.
That's it for this edition of The Method. Listen back to all of our past episodes at WUOT.org. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.